welcome to Hero Hype episode 36. Yes, we are back once more with our brand new format. So this week we are going to be breaking down a couple of different things of all the different episodes that aired this week, as well as bringing you a brief history and a comic corner of two characters that I personally love very, very much. As always, though, I am joined by my co-host, Caitlin.
Hello.
And I am Danya, if you've forgotten us between the last episode and now. But as always, guys, if you want to get involved in the conversation, talk to us about any of the shows that are airing, news that you've seen, or just want to chat in general, you can get hold of us on our Twitter account, which is at Hero Hype Podcast. You can send us an email, which is herohypepodcast@gmail.com. Or you can leave us a comment on this post when it goes up on hyperbole.com. But let's get right down to it. So we're going to start you off with a brief history of my new bae. And that is Captain Cold. So Leonard Snart grew up in an abusive household. His drunkard father taught him emotion was a weakness and that being cold-hearted would get him further in life. His grandfather protected him as much as he could, granting him safe haven in his ice cream truck. Though it was freezing, it was one of the few places Leonard truly felt safe. Once he was older, he ran away from home and turned to a life of crime, though his criminal escapades were thwarted by the Flash. Leonard started researching ways to counteract the Flash, before coming across an article that theorized that energy emissions of a cyclotron would interfere with the Flash's speed. He constructed a gun that would shoot ice and reduce temperatures to absolute zero, adopting the name Captain Cold. He often fluctuates between sides, operating mostly in shades of grey, and has teamed up with heroes as well as other villains in the Rogues Gallery.
And Danya has a lot of Captain Cold feels after Legends.
I do. I have a lot, especially this week's episode. Seeing him interacting with his baby self, like, literally reduced me to, like, a blubbering mess. I was having a lot of emotions about that moment. It was terrible. It was awesome, but it was terrible. Oh, Leonard. Oh, my heart. I didn't expect to love him as much as I do, but I do. I love him. I think I'm going to blame Marima for it. Just, she started it. I don't know.
And she's not here to defend herself.
Exactly. So. Exactly. Right. Not a lot of news this week, guys. Very news light across the board. We did get some cool casting news, though, for the upcoming Legion TV series, which, if you've forgotten, is an X-Men spin-off that is being helmed by Marvel and Fox. So they are working together. Yeah, I know. We still think the apocalypse is coming because of this, and not just X-Men apocalypse. But they have started out casting. So Dan Stevens has got the lead role, but he will also be joined by Aubrey Plaza, which, oh my god, I'm so excited about that because I love her, and Jean Smart. So yeah, it's coming, it's happening. I'm really excited about this cast, particularly because I love Dan Stevens in Downton Abbey, and Aubrey Plaza is amazing in Parks and Rec. Not too familiar with Jean Smart, though. So, but I'm assuming, seeing as they were part of Fargo, that they're pretty great as well. I don't know if you're familiar with them, Caitlin.
I'm not familiar with any of these people, so I'm in the dark.
Ooh. Well, it's going to shape up to be quite interesting, but that's pretty much all that we've got for now. Just the, yes, casting has happened, and yeah, it is coming, and they're playing nice for now in the sandbox. Watch out for drama, though.
But on the DC side, our lack of news is made up for the quality of news, because we have confirmation that that long-rumored Flash and Supergirl crossover is happening. That's right. Whoop, whoop. It's going to air It's going to air on March 28th. It's going to happen on Supergirl. So Grant Gustin will appear on Supergirl as Barry Allen and The Flash. And the episode is going to be titled World's Finest. And it's noteworthy that there's no apostrophe there. So I take the implication that it means multiple worlds. So that seems like the most logical way to make this work.
Yeah, it really does. And I'm super excited, and there's going to be so many shenanigans, and Kara and Barry being in, like, the same place is just so exciting.
They're going to be so precious together.
I am so excited about this. It is unbelievable. I just think they're going to play really well off each other, and if we don't even get, like, a tiny little something of a song somewhere in there, I'll be mildly disappointed.
Yeah, it's a Glee reunion.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're going to have a Glee reunion, you've got to have a tiny bit of singing. But,
no. But considering how many people on all of these superhero casts can sing and none of them have done a musical yet, is pretty sad.
Yeah, yeah. Where are our musical episodes, guys? Come on. But yeah, that legitimately is it for news. we couldn't even curate 5 headlines for this week for you for TV news, guys. We have 2.
But yeah, wait till we get to the movies.
I mean, movies totally blew TV out of the water with the amount of news that there was. I'm kidding. But we'll make up for that with the fact that some really great episodes of TV happened this week. So, where would we like to start?
Shall we start with our lone Marvel series?
Yeah, let's go with our Badass Lady series. One of our Badass Lady series.
Yeah, exactly. One of them
on the Marvel side. So, yeah, let's start off with Agent Carter. So, I guess this week, what I wanted to really look at with this show was kind of the way that both Peggy and Whitney used and succumbed to society's expectations of them, you know, depending on which side they were on. This episode did some really cool things with flashbacks, looking at where both ladies came from. And obviously with Peggy in season 1, we knew that she was a codebreaker at one point during the war, but we didn't really know, you know, exactly where she came from, what happened to her, to what extent. So we got some really great flashbacks there. And what you see is a really interesting parallel between these two characters. So Peggy, as a very young girl, starts off very headstrong, very determined, very much the Peggy that we know and love now, but in a teeny tiny form, saving princesses with her sword and running around and being completely adorable. And we see her interactions with her brother and her family and, well, her mother specifically, and her mother's expectations for her and what will happen in her life and what she needs to be in order to, you know, succeed. And on the other side, you also get Whitney around the same age with her mother telling her very similar things, but Whitney kind of, you know, rebelling against that slightly more. The constant use of men telling her to smile through this episode was absolutely fascinating as well, especially when you get to the end of Whitney's little arc through all of the flashbacks, and she figures out that she can use that against people by playing into it. But I thought it was a really, really cool way of showing, I guess, how fallible Peggy is, and how even as strong as she is at the point that we know her from season 1, that at one point in her life, she can succumb to the same societal pressures that we do. She started conforming to what was expected of her, finding a safe partner, you know, getting engaged, starting on the road to being, you know, a stable married woman, which for the most part was what was expected of people at that time, played against the fact that her country wanted her to go undercover as a spy and basically serving properly in the war, aside from being a codebreaker at Bletchley Park. So I just thought, obviously Peggy is a character that I really admire, but there was something about this episode that kind of made her that more relatable, because we're not always going to be that strong all the time. We're not always going to be perfect in the respect of being able to be strong and, I guess, strong and able to fight against what society expects us to do. And seeing her struggle against that as much as any of us would in our day-to-day lives and eventually overcome it made her that much more relatable for me. And I'm glad that in flashbacks we got to see that. We got to see those cracks, those moments of her kind of, you know, falling to that pressure before being able to claw and drag her way back out again. I mean, what did you think of this episode?
I mean, I'm not sure I would categorize Peggy, like, falling into society's expectations as weakness. Like, that sort of rings wrong to me. It's just different. Because for many women, that is the right choice for them and what they want. But it's not what we know is right for Peggy. So it's kind of, I guess I don't want to call it weakness. It's just her, I don't know, falling in line because it's what's expected, but I don't know if that's weak of her. It's just, she doesn't seem to have a whole lot other choice according to, you know, her parents' expectations and society's expectations. And I think it's interesting that we see Peggy, when we meet her, she's already this, you know, breaking the mold in so many ways when we first see her in Captain America and get to know her more through the television series. But she's still a woman who society, we know, looks at in a certain way. And it's interesting to see her have to deal with that, like, on the more family front. And I think it's the fact that they had the news of her brother being killed and her leaving while she was in the wedding dress was such a powerful scene, because that was kind of the one of the last moments of her before she was going to go into that other life. And then she sees her mother getting the news that her brother had died, and just, oh, that was heartbreaking.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. The scene with her in the wedding dress, and then the way that it kind of moves into the scene where she takes off her ring and puts it on the dresser and takes the offer of her position to be a spy, basically. And I just thought that whole extended scene, when you had that really quiet moment where it was just her at the window crying and then morphing into her leaving, you know, the ring and picking up the suitcase and leaving, like, that was just, you didn't need words there. It gave it space to breathe, and it gave you space to kind of really feel what she was feeling. But yeah, I think you're right in that it's not necessarily a weakness, but it's more that Peggy isn't demure. It's what women were expected to be, was that they were this, they basically just all fall into line, and they had a very almost strict progression of what was specifically expected of them in that time, you know?
Yeah, it just wasn't what was right for her.
Yes, and that she was susceptible to falling in line like that just kind of shows, it kind of shows that we all can sometimes forget ourselves in order to sometimes make our life easier, but also kind of, I don't know how to explain it. Like, sometimes you're still yourself, but you'll do it because it's easier sometimes to just go with it than it is to keep fighting, because sometimes it's exhausting and sometimes it's really, really difficult to do it because you get trodden down by it a lot, or at least sometimes I find that. And the fact that you can find that balance eventually between truly being who you are and getting what you want out of your life, in respect of Peggy being able to go on this amazing adventure, serve her country and do what she wants and be the change that she wants to see in the world, but at the same time still be that woman who aspires to have some kind of love in her life, that we know eventually she's going to get married. We know eventually that she finds that love of her life outside of Steve. And it just shows that you can have both. You can be both. And that's fine. But it's also fine sometimes to stumble on the way to figuring that out, because we all do it.
Yeah, it kind of seems like that sort of life for Peggy became, probably from a young age, a fantasy, because, you know, it started out with her play acting, and she's never really allowed to progress past that, those kinds of actions in an imaginary setting. So even the offer to go in as a spy probably in some ways just didn't seem like an actual possibility for her. And that's kind of society at that time. It was just like, this is not something women can do. It just doesn't seem realistic. So I can see for her that it just seems so completely unrealistic that it's not even something to consider until everything shatters, basically.
Yeah. And then obviously you get on the complete opposite side of the spectrum, Whitney, who's told that her face, her looks, and everything that comes along with that being a woman is how she can manipulate people into getting what she wants. And you see it through, obviously, her mother's home life and what's going on and how they behave with the man who is essentially just there to get some, and he basically just pays to get it. But it was really, really interesting to see it from opposite sides. And especially when Whitney breaks free and you see her in Hollywood and you see her at that kind of that cinema, and she turns everything around. She realizes that being classically beautiful, she could put on a mask, ho 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 ho, and really get what she wanted and do everything else behind that. And it was just really fascinating to see those two backstories played off each other and showing them almost getting to the same ends or achieving the same ends in respect to what they wanted from their lives, but the two opposing approaches to it, whereas one really, really used what society expected of them and pushed it in a different direction to further their career and get them out. And I just thought it was really clever, the structure of the episode, to set them up and set them off each other. I thought it was really cleverly done.
Yeah, I feel like in some ways Peggy and Whitney are total opposites in the way that they kind of what they want from life, but in other ways they're so similar in that they are struggling against the society as an attractive woman, and they both utilize that to varying degrees. I mean, even Peggy uses the fact that she's a woman because she doesn't really have a choice, and she lets her male coworkers at times completely underestimate her, and sometimes that's to her benefit and sometimes it's not. But in other ways, they're just so opposite from each other, and it was really fascinating to see kind of the parallels between the two in that way, that they could be so similar but so different.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought this, I think, was definitely one of my favorite episodes that they've done so far. It was just so cleverly structured. I was really impressed with it. And I want to go back and rewatch it again and see if I pick up other bits, especially the stuff with Peggy and her brother as well, because that was so heartbreaking. But I really, really do want to go back and rewatch this episode again, because there was just so much there. And I'm looking forward to how they keep playing them off each other through the rest of the season, because I think there are some really interesting parallels between them and how they keep overlapping in certain aspects of their lives and then wildly differ in others. And it's adding a whole new dimension to this season that I'm thoroughly enjoying.
Agreed. So all the love for Agent Carter this week.
Oh yeah, definitely.
All right, let's move on to our other kick-ass girl show, this time on the DC side. We have a couple things to touch on. First, I wanted to touch on kind of the Kara and Adam relationship, or lack thereof, by the end of this episode. And I feel like, for me, I couldn't help but draw parallels to the way The Flash handled Barry and Patty, to the way Supergirl handled Kara and Adam, because Kara and Adam go on a date, it's interrupted when Kara needs to go be Supergirl, and then they have a rain check and go out again, and Bizarro targets her, and Adam thinks she's been kidnapped, and Kara eventually just says, I can't do this, basically, and Adam is trying to encourage her to be like, you know, you don't have to be alone. She, yes, I do. Like, so she essentially does what Barry does to Patty, though Barry and Patty were together for significantly longer period of time. And I guess I felt less frustrated with Kara than I felt with Barry. I'm not sure why, but at the end of the day, I kind of wonder what was the point of bringing Adam in at all if they were going to go out on two dates and then call it good and Adam was going to leave?
Yeah, that's kind of the point where I was at. I was like, this just seems completely unnecessary. We didn't need a potential third love interest for Kara when it was going to be that short-lived. I mean, yes, it was incredibly interesting to see Adam and respect Kat and that sort of thing, and their chemistry was really great, obviously as you would expect from a married couple, but I just felt a little bit I don't think it's necessarily disappointment either. It just felt, a little bit like, that's it? That's all we get? Really? It just kind of was like, oh, I thought it was gonna, you know, be one of those storylines where maybe they were together a bit longer and then you kind of saw it developing over the rest of the series and Kara kind of slowly understanding what she wanted from love and relationships and that sort of thing. And it just kind of felt a bit abrupt, almost. It felt like you were just getting into it and suddenly it was like whiplash. It was like, whoa, okay, so we're done with it. And I think the reason that possibly it's less frustrating than the Barry and Patty storyline is that Barry and Patty storyline did have that time to grow. We got to fall in love with those characters. We got to fall in love with them falling in love. And Patty was such, she brought so much to the show. And we barely knew Adam. So the fact that Kara, I guess, was at a point where she realized that it wouldn't work out and it was better for both of them at this point to kind of put a stop to it when it was just two dates in. I mean, that's less frustrating. And you know, that kind of happens in love and relationships and dating. Sometimes you'll find an incompatibility somewhere along the line when you're just getting started out and knowing each other. But it did have very direct parallels back to how the Barry and Patty storyline played out this season, and yeah, it was just, it was over so soon. It just felt, yeah, it felt a bit abrupt.
I felt a little bit like Kara was being a little self-destructive in breaking up with Adam so quickly, and I'm not sure if anyone else got that impression, but I sort of felt like everyone was kind of like, really? You're gonna cut this short so soon? And she was the only one who really felt that it needed to be done. And if they want to play it that she didn't make a great decision in it, then I'm fine with that because it's saying, hey, he would have been good for you, but you didn't give it a chance. But I actually expected after she broke things off and then Maxwell Lord told Bizarro to target who Supergirl cares about, that I thought Adam was going to get targeted because Bizarro found Kara when she was on a date with Adam. And I thought they were going to go that route so that they were going to kind of say, he's leaving, but guess what? He just got pulled back in because Supergirl had to rescue him and then he gets pulled into the whole thing. But no, nope, that's not what happened.
Yeah, yeah, it just felt a little bit like, oh, okay. But, you know, it is what it is. It was nice to see Kara potentially exploring feelings outside of, I guess outside of James, because up until this point, she still has those feelings for him, but obviously that's not something that's going to be moving forward for her. And obviously the whole thing with Wynn, it was just nice to see her being open to someone else, or open to someone else being able to get to her in a romantic sense, which means that she's not going to get worn down by Wynn into, like, giving into that. But in the other respect, she's not going to be hanging on and waiting for James, which I think is a much healthier way of approaching it, that if she just keeps on being who she is and carrying on, that, you know, what happens, happens, rather than, you know, the ways that these things usually go, which I much prefer her not waiting around for either character, Wynn or James, so...
Can I just throw in real quick that Wynn remains horrible in this episode? I was, like, in that scene where he was having a drink with James and was basically like, why aren't you being an asshole to Kara like I am? And James is like, because I'm not a horrible person, basically.
Yeah.
That was what I read in that scene anyway.
Oh, man.
I was hoping that his aftermath of getting rejected in the Toyman thing, he would improve. But no, he's awful as ever, and I can't. I'm done with him.
I would also like to point out the friend zone is not a thing. It's not. That's it. It's not a thing. You are either friends, and that's as far as it goes, but you are never friend zoned. That's not something that happens. I'm sorry. It's just, it's essentially flipping it on its head to blame someone else for a lack of feeling on their part, and that's not okay. It's not a deliberate thing. It's not done out of spite. It just is. That's just how they feel about you. And turning it on someone else to be able to blame them is essentially an extension of this victim-blaming culture that we have, and it really bothers the hell out of me. So the whole friend zoning thing, like, no, I don't accept it. I reject this reality. go to the corner and think about what you've done.
Yeah, so basically Wynn is awful, but also awful is Maxwell Lord, who has pretty much full-on gone Lex Luthor in this episode. Like, he just went from, like, gray area to full-on Lex Luthor. So I guess what I want to kind of touch on is, at the end, Alex realizes, you know, he says that he knows who Kara is, and Alex is like, I am not having this, you are not threatening my family, and she arrests him, and they are holding him in the DEO. But as Hank says, he's kind of a big deal, he's kind of famous, someone's going to notice that he's
Yeah, that's probably going to come back and bite her in the ass somewhere along the line, because technically she doesn't have the jurisdiction or authority to hold him like that, because technically in the eyes of the law, he hasn't necessarily done anything yet in respect to what she's kind of arrested him for, so it's kind of a little bit like, I mean, he's terrible, and I get it, but that's not going to work out so well in the long run.
I mean, I was all about Alex, like, slamming his face in the table when he was threatening her family, but I do foresee this causing issues. But I am all for take charge, Alex. She is like, you are not touching my family.
Yeah.
I don't care about the consequences.
Yeah. I kind of really love that as well, but I love this whole, he's gone full Lex Luthor. description of him. Yeah.
I mean, we've been calling him kind of the Lex Luthor of the show, and he just, like, full on took it on.
Yeah, basically.
But I will say that I am enjoying the hell out of Peter Facinelli's portrayal of the character.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
He is so beyond sleazy, and I just love it.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on Supergirl?
No, I think we covered everything there that I would have wanted to.
So, speaking of families, we can talk about The Flash, which was very much about families this week. This one, I feel like it was okay. It was not the strongest episode they've ever done. The metahuman of the week was really inconsequential. It was really mostly about the Wests trying to incorporate Wally into their family, because I guess Francine has died. That's kind of the way they're talking.
Yeah.
But so Wally is still drag racing and Iris is not okay with it. And Joe is kind of trying to be like cool dad best friend to Wally. And Iris is like, this is not who you are. What are you doing? And he's like, I just need to gain his trust before I can do anything about it. But really, he's just like, I'm trying not to screw this up. Poor Joe. But Iris really kicks ass in this episode. She does not give up on Wally. She's got this younger brother now, and she's going to look after him come hell or high water. And she threatens a gangster, which was amazing.
So many great Iris moments in this episode.
Yeah. So Iris proves you don't need superpowers to be a freaking badass. And like, you could tell how terrified she was in that scene where she was threatening the gangster who runs the drag races. And the whole time she's just like, I'm going to publish this thing. This whole conversation is being recorded. Like, she's terrified and she goes through it anyway because she's trying to protect Wally, which I thought was really amazing. But Wally is kind of addicted to speed, which, haha, that's real subtle, guys.
I know.
Real subtle.
So subtle, the most subtle.
But Iris gets injured at a drag race, which I thought the promo looked like she got cut, the glass went into her neck. So when it hit her in the shoulder in the actual episode, I was like, oh, she's fine.
Yeah.
They were like, trying to make it look like she was going to die. I'm like, oh, she's fine, whatever. But it takes her getting injured for Wally to really get his priorities sorted out. But then he and Joe have a good heart-to-heart, and then he and Iris have a good heart-to-heart, and they're on their way to becoming a family.
Yeah. Yeah, this episode was kind of, like you said, a little bit like, meh. Like, kind of standalone one-note kind of thing before I guess we get right back into the story again. But yeah, it was great. It was great for, like, the West family and Joe and Iris interacting with each other and with Wally and Wally with the... It was just so well done. And it just... This is what I really love from the show, like, is the family dynamics. And I really like how Wally is kind of fitting in at the moment, because obviously this is as much an upheaval for him as it is for Iris and for Joe as well. And it's just great seeing them try and awkwardly navigate fitting him into their lives and kind of coming to terms with everything that's happened, because it's just been dumped on them essentially. And yeah, I love seeing this. And yeah, it just all in regard to the West family, just such a good episode for them.
Yeah. I guess the other family that's having issues in this episode is the Wells family from Arc 2. Harrison puts a little thing in Barry's suit and starts siphoning off his speed and gives it to Zoom, who remains terrifying. Like,
yeah.
I kind of forgot how terrifying, like, that mouth is on his suit. Just, They really succeeded in making him scary.
Yeah, they really, really did. They weren't kidding in, like, all of the lead-up to this season, being like, Zoom's gonna scare the crap out of you. You're going to be absolutely freaking terrified all the time. Yeah, that wasn't an exaggeration. No, that was genuine. Yeah.
But, Barry finally starts noticing that he's lost 2% of his speed. But rather than keep siphoning off his speed for his daughter's sake, Harry confesses what happened, which I thought was interesting, because he's been like, I'm going to do everything for my daughter. You guys don't have my loyalty. This is all about my daughter. And it's kind of hard to blame him for that. But you can tell he's gained enough loyalty to this team to say, I did it. And then he takes the thing out and is like, just send me home, even though he knows that's probably going to cause his death and probably his daughter's death at that point.
Yeah.
So he'd had a massive bit of character development in that moment.
I was really impressed. Really impressed with that moment, because it was kind of one of those turning points, because I was like, I wasn't sure where he stood sometimes. I was like, what? Sometimes I was like, what is your game? What is your, beyond this, beyond getting your daughter back, what what else is in it for you? Because it always just seemed so shady sometimes, everything that he was doing. But then the more that you saw him interacting with all of the different characters, like Barry, like Sisko, especially Sisko, and you see him slowly starting to gain a respect for them and actually starting to fit in and feel emotions in respect to them, you know, it was nice to see that he's not completely unaffected by the fact that he's essentially leading them to the slaughter if he keeps siphoning off Barry's power and speed. So it was really interesting to see that change and that honesty from him as well, because obviously there's still that lingering expectation that he's going to continue to be a terrible character just because he's wearing the face of our villain from the first season, even though they're not the same person. And it was such a nice subversion of that expectation that he should continue to be a bad guy, essentially, when at heart he really isn't. So I like that.
Yeah, I appreciated that a lot, and it earned a lot of respect from Barry. But I also appreciated Papa Bear Joe, who was just like, I am going to kill him because he targeted my my cub. Like, so that was kind of great. But yeah, so this one was all about the families, and then in the next episode, we're going to Earth 2.
Yes, I'm actually really excited for this.
A lot. Yeah, the pictures of Earth 2 Barry are kind of amazing.
Oh my god. Yes, yeah. I'm really anticipating this next episode. It's going to be insane.
But yes, so we thought we would combine the Arrow and Legends of Tomorrow discussion because there were a couple thematic lines that went through both of them. And we're not entirely sure they were using consistent rules. And we are talking, of course, about the Lazarus Pit. On Arrow, Thea has not been killing people. She hasn't had a bloodlust since her run-in with Damian Dark. And now the Lazarus Pit is essentially taking the life she is not taking from others, from her. So she's slowly dying. And at the end of the episode, falls into a coma. And then meanwhile, Sarah, who in Arrow they say is fine because of John Constantine, even though she had an episode of bloodlust, and then she has bloodlust in this episode of Legends of Tomorrow. But okay, she goes a little crazy at one point. She like knocks a bunch of people out and then gets pretty violent. And she talks to Rip Hunter about like being a monster, and his solution is like, be better. Like, but if she does that and she doesn't kill people, then she's going to have the same thing happen to her that's happening to Thea on the show that airs the night before you. So I'm a little confused what message they're trying to send with these characters who have been revived by the Lazarus Pit. What do you think, Danya?
Yeah, I was a little bit like, your rules are not consistent right now. What's happening to one character isn't happening to the other necessarily, and everything seems to be kind of changing depending on what show they're in. And I was a little bit like, but I don't understand. I mean, I know that Sarah specifically has actually been, in some respects, actually killing people, and so that potentially has been kind of satisfying the bloodlust, I guess. But it's very confusing. I don't understand where they're going with it, especially because these two episodes add back to back, and you know, you have one character fighting, both characters are trying to fight against the bloodlust and so on, but the consequences don't seem to line up exactly the same. So I'm not sure where they're going with this, because there's a very direct parallel between these two shows right now, with what's happening with Thea and Sarah kind of going off the rails a little bit in this episode, but I don't understand. I don't understand the message they're trying to get across here, because obviously You also get the whole thing where, like, Nyssa is like, there is a way to stop this. There is a way to cure this bloodlust for Thea and save her and blah, 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 blah. There is, like, this magic solution. And then you've got Sarah, on the other hand, which, you know, understandably she doesn't know because she's off traveling in the 70s right now. But she's like, there's no magic solution to this. And you're like, they're going, whoa, whiplash between these two shows. It's like...
Yeah, except the one that they brought up yesterday.
Yeah. Except for that magic solution. Yeah, it's...
And if that existed, why didn't Nyssa, like, encourage them to go get that when Sarah was first resurrected and she was super against it?
Yeah. Yeah, that doesn't quite line up either. Because you would think, considering their relationship, that when Sarah was resurrected, she might offer that up. Because, you know, regardless of how she felt about it, in respect to she was very much against the fact that they wanted to bring Sarah back. She thought, yeah, we all know what she thought. But, you know, it's kind of irrespective of that, once it's happened, you know, you might want to do something about the fact that your possibly ex-girlfriend is now running around wanting to kill everyone and having to kill people in order to, you know, not go completely crazy. And... yeah, you'd think that would be something you'd mention.
Yeah, which, you know, we know that they're making stuff up as they go. And some of the logic here, you're like, it's a little bit clear that that's happening. But it just, I feel like I can maybe sort of make it work because, you know, Rip telling Sarah, like, we have to try to be better, but he's still expecting her to be the assassin that she needs to be, just not be over the top about it, I guess. So she would still technically be killing people, just the ones that they need killed, and not being just reckless or, yeah, overly violent. I don't know.
It's just kind of like, okay, murder, but just a little bit of murder.
Yeah, exactly. Just a little bit.
Yeah, we're just gonna murder them a tiny bit. You know, we're just gonna kill them to death a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's kind of confusing, and it's just really noticeable when they're airing back to back.
Yeah,
that these two characters are dealing with the same thing, and Sarah even brings up Thea in her episode.
Yes,
and then it's like, okay, I'm a little confused.
Yeah, I was a little bit confused as well. I was just like, okay, I think it's because. I mean, I guess not everyone's going to be watching all of these shows, even if they kind of thread into each other, because not all of them are going to... It's not going to be everyone's thing. So I can kind of guess that some people may have just seen Arrow, some people may have just seen Legends of Tomorrow, so they won't have this kind of yo-yoing between logics. And I guess for those of us who watch all of them... it's a little bit like, oh, the messages aren't really consistent and it stands out that much more to us.
And that hasn't been a problem so far, really, with Arrow and The Flash. They've done a pretty good job of keeping them connected. Like, this week's episode of The Flash had a newsreel that was talking about Oliver's mayoral campaign.
Yeah.
Like, they do a pretty good job of keeping the logic consistent between those two shows. So it just feels out of place for that to happen on Legends, when they've done a very good job of it with the other two shows.
Yeah. Yeah, no, agreed. So I'm hoping that as we continue along, obviously this Thea storyline and the Sarah storyline are going to continue to thread into each other. And I'm just hoping that as it keeps going, as we come up to, I guess, the end of the season on Arrow, and as we continue through the season on Legends of Tomorrow, that it'll become a little bit clearer and a little bit more concise, and a little bit more consistent in respect to the rules. I don't know if Constantine's meddling has messed things up on Sarah's part, but we don't have enough information in order to understand why it's different for both characters right now. So,
yeah.
Bring Constantine back. He can explain it.
Yeah, they should have had him look at Thea before he left.
Yeah.
If he made Sarah good, then he should have made Thea good before leaving.
Yeah. No, it's okay. He can come back. It's fine.
But is Thea in the grave? Is Thea the one in the grave now?
I don't know. It basically, everything has kind of been thrown into disarray. It could be anyone. Except for Felicity.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like that was their implication at the end of this episode, but I felt like the implication at the end of last episode was that it was Diggle. So I feel like every episode they're going to imply that it's somebody else until we actually find out who it is.
Yeah, until someone ends up dead. Yeah.
But briefly, just arrow-wise, we also got a pretty big reveal. It was one that had been theorized since the calculator was cast, but he is indeed Felicity's father. So the character we have been waiting to meet for a very long time, we have met him. We have met Papa Smoke. How do you feel?
Still mild, like very mildly disappointed that it wasn't our original theory, but, you know, still quite interesting because he seems quite a formidable criminal, honestly. And so it's going to be interesting to see this kind of working itself out. Yeah.
And he lines up with everything we know, which we don't know a lot, but we know that Felicity learned all her computer hacking genius from her father. And we know that he left them and he was in prison and was a criminal. So
yeah,
he fits.
He does fit. So
yeah. So, looking forward, it looks like the next episode will have Felicity and her father interacting more, so it'll be interesting to see where it goes.
Yeah, definitely. I mean,
but we finally got an answer we've been wanting for a while now.
Yeah, and I mean, it's another kind of family dynamic, I guess, but it's going to be a more difficult family dynamic, and, you know, it's going to cause some friction, which I'm kind of looking forward to a little bit. Just because I do like some drama in my Arrow, but I like it to be slightly different than, like, relationship drama, which is what we usually get.
We like the right kind of drama.
The right kind of drama. Yeah.
Yeah, but so interesting things being set up there, which I'm looking forward to seeing.
Yeah, same. But that's it for TV for another week. But
oh, gosh.
I know. So, let's move on to our movie hype, our movie news. And I mean, guys, there's
a lot.
So much. No, we've literally got one. We've got one news headline for you guys. And even then, it's not hugely memorable. Basically, some Guardians of the Galaxy 2 behind-the-scenes images have come out showing some of the cast rehearsing on set, which, you know, the images are actually quite funny. They're quite amusing. They were a lot of fun. James Gunn posted them. They're just kind of cute to see them messing around behind the scenes, but basically this was in honor of basically saying to us, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is starting filming on February the 11th. So it's happening. It's going into production. And everyone looks like they're having a lot of fun behind the scenes as they're getting ready to actually film. So it's coming.
Indeed. So I don't think there was any surprise about that.
No. But I guess watch this space. I think now that they're going into full production and filming that we'll probably start seeing a little bit more, getting a little bit more information, depending on if they're filming on location somewhere and not on like sound stages, we'll probably get people who have gone down there to kind of snap pictures. So we'll start getting little bits of information here and there. So that'll be quite nice because at the moment, all we know is it's going to be something to do with Star-Lord finding out who his dad is, and that's pretty much it, other than we may or may not be getting more female characters.
That'd be nice.
Yeah. There was also a rumour circulating that we'd get more of Gamora and Nebula's relationship, so I guess, yeah, it would be nice to get a little bit more information on that and some confirmation in places as well. But yeah, that's it for movie news.
We told you it was blowing the TV news out of the water.
I know. It's just so much. So much. Right. Comic Corner, then. So I'm doing something a little bit different this week. So not necessarily going to take you through each kind of comic and telling you why I like it. This one I'm going to give you a little bit of an overview, because there are literally only three comics for this character. So this week's Comic Corner is for Lucifer. So I guess Lucifer started life in Neil Gaiman's Sandman. He's introduced to us as like a fallen angel who's bored of his existence. He kind of became tired of his reign over hell, seeing it as an unfair punishment for his rebellion. And he expelled all demons and damned souls from hell before locking the gates and retiring to Earth. And he handed the keys over to Dream of the Endless, who's the main character of Sandman, who in turn then handed them to two angels who took over in hell. Lucifer eventually landed this like solo spin-off series, which was helmed by Mike Carey, which built off the foundation set by Gaiman, and it delved a lot deeper into Lucifer as a character. So in the series, like the television adaptation, if you guys are watching that, Lucifer runs a piano bar in Los Angeles called Lux, accompanied by Mazikeen, who is a Lilim. Lilims are descended from Lilith, so if you're familiar with the Bible and kind of mythology and stuff like that, you'll know that kind of demon. And the comics kind of explored issues of free will and predestination and turned a little bit more of a critical eye to heaven's rule. It's really deeply philosophical and thought-provoking. And it's kind of a safe bet for anyone who's looking to get into comics without needing to trudge through endless backstory. And DC's New 52 recently reintroduced Lucifer into their roster, but he's a slightly different interpretation from Gaiman and Carey's, but it's still thoroughly enjoyable and worth checking out. So what I'm going to do for Comic Corner, when you go into the show notes, I'll give you a link for where to buy Sandman, a link for where to buy Lucifer, and a link for where to buy New 52 Lucifer. But it's that short and sweet, guys. He's not appeared in much, but what he's appeared in is, like, top quality comics. Okay, feedback. So, we got quite a bit of feedback again this week, so thanks, guys, as always, for getting in touch with us. We did ask you for some feedback about the new format and whether you're enjoying it and what you like about it and so on. We put up a little poll. It's nice to see that none of you completely hated it, so... So thanks for not hating us. obviously, as we keep going along, please just let us know what you're thinking, whether you're still enjoying it. And, in fact, guys, if there is something that's happened on an episode that you think would make a really good discussion topic for the episode, let us know. You may hit on something that we've been feeling as well and wanting to discuss, so... Yeah, just throw ideas out there. We're always open to them, and yeah, happy to get you involved a little bit more with where we take the discussion.
Yes, indeed. But we have some other feedback to talk about as well. We got a tweet from Stephanie Merrill in response to our discussion about the Dark Knight Returns Oliver, who's going to appear in a few weeks on Legends. She says, Oliver is becoming Uncle Iroh. And my thought is just, you know, minus an arm, plus some rage, and probably minus the tea obsession.
But otherwise, yes, completely like, yeah. Uncle Iroh.
Quality, you know, facial hair similarities, absolutely.
Quality facial hair. Oh,
there's the title.
Yeah, that's, do you know what, funnily enough, that's exactly what I was thinking. I was like, yeah, I need to make a note of that, because yeah, that's pretty much where it's going. Cassie's back. Hi, Cassie. Left a comment for us on the Hyperbole post, and Cassie said, I'm glad the Patty Barry arc is done. Feel bad for Patty because I liked her at first, but I found that she and Barry had no chemistry. The writers were trying to force them together, then trying to force drama, and just the whole thing felt forced. Every scene of theirs felt drawn out and halted the momentum of the episode. I don't blame Patty, nor do I blame the actress. It was all in the writing. It was horrible. I hate the implications that came with writing her character off, but I'm glad I don't have to suffer through their scenes anymore.
Ouch.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a different opinion, because we obviously were very into Barry and Patty as a relationship and how they played off each other, but obviously when it took that turn into them writing her off, it felt really abrupt and a little bit like, okay, I didn't think we were going to go in that direction, but...
Still raged.
Yeah.
Still raging.
Yeah. I mean, there were points where, like, they were forcing it. They were very clearly starting to force it in the direction of being able to get rid of Patty, and that's just not great.
Which sort of goes back to the question about Adam, that if you were going to go this route, what was the point?
Yeah. Yeah, it just seems a little unnecessary.
But yeah. Andrew. Hi, Andrew. We haven't heard from you in a while. Tweeted us to say, I wanted to say I'm loving Sarah in Legends of Tomorrow. Still don't really enjoy her in Arrow. Not sure what is making the difference. And as the resident Sarah Lance fangirl, I have to say I'm very glad to hear this.
Yeah, no, it is. I think it's probably a lot to do with the characters that she's playing off. I mean, a lot of the characters on Arrow are very firmly in some ways in the side of good. Like, they're very morally just, a lot of them. They will sometimes edge into shades of grey in order to do that, but especially in this season, you've seen a massive shift towards them operating in the light. Ha ha, ha ha. But I think, I think a lot of that might be to do with the characters she's playing off. They are a lot. For the most part, they're villains, so it's quite interesting to see her interacting with and playing off those characters specifically. So I guess, yeah, it's I'm guessing it's probably situational. You know, you put a character in a completely different setting and you'll get different reactions out of them. But I'm also, I loved Sarah anyway, but again, she's great in Legends of Tomorrow. I think we're seeing a whole different side to her that is just a lot of fun, especially when she's around Leonard. I'm really loving those two when they're around each other and playing off each other. But also this episode with her and Rip was...
Yeah.
Yeah. But it also played on one of those tropes that... Okay, I'm a fanfic reader, and I'm really into that trope of we need to pretend to be, like, boyfriend and girlfriend and go
fake
undercover.
Dating.
Yeah, fake dating is, like, a trope. Fake dating, fake marriage is, like, a huge tropey love of mine. I absolutely adore it. So whenever anyone kind of plays on that, I'm like, yes! Yes! Let's go! Give me all of the fake relationship.
I quite enjoyed when she was, like, listing off all the reasons that they had been busted, and then she just, like, throws the knife at the woman. And
yes!
He's like, how many knives do you have?
Oh, it was excellent. I loved it. We also got a response back to, like, Arrow and who's in the grave. So Cassie came back and said, Roy, why else bring him back randomly this season other than to be like, remember him and how much everyone loves him? Clearly brought Roy in to remind us that still alive and loved so that they can kill him for drama without affecting the main cast. That would seem a little bit mean.
I mean, I thought they brought him back to say farewell to Thea because Thea's in the grave.
Oh, I mean, that's definitely another way of looking at it. I like Roy. I do. Again, this feels like an unnecessary thing to be happening right now.
He wasn't needed for that story to move forward at all. He was kind of superfluous to the episode.
Yeah, and it just kind of was a bit like, okay, hi, Riot, it's nice to see you, but
this... You're still pretty and do your unnecessary parkour.
unnecessary parkour, also a contender for episode title, but no. Yeah, that's it for feedback, guys. Again, thank you so much for everyone who left us comments and tweets and let us know what they thought of the new format. If you would like to get hold of us, give us feedback or anything, you can always get hold of us on Twitter, which is at Hero Hype Podcast. You can send us an email, which is herohypepodcast@gmail.com. Or again, leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. We see all of them. And if we haven't responded to your stuff on the show, don't worry, we'll probably jump in and out of the comments and respond to you there or respond to your tweets. So,
yeah. And we have read it either way.
Yes. Yeah, we definitely read everything that you guys send. So, right. Question of the week. So, last week we asked you, what would your main complaint about your younger self be if you traveled back in time and met him or her? And Cassie replied to it, saying, I would probably be annoyed at my younger self being an insufferable know-it-all. Then again, not much has changed. Either that, or I'd be annoyed at her being so boy crazy. Oh, yeah, I think we'd all kind of mildly side-eye our younger selves.
For sure.
Oh, yeah. Would you like to ask this week's question of the week?
Sure. So, in honor of Agent Carter, we are asking, what position would your sibling nominate you for?
So, again, guys, let us know on Twitter, via email, or in this post when it goes up on hyperbole.com. But that's it for another week. Thank you guys for listening, and we will be back with hopefully slightly more news next week. But definitely a lot more discussion about all of our favorite shows. But until next time, guys, I'm Danya.
And I'm Caitlin.
And we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.